WPFW, making a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Welcome to The Collision.
The Collision, where sports and politics smash. Thursdays at 10 a.m. and on iTunes and Google Play. WPFW, Washington, D.C.
Welcome, everybody, to Community Watch and Comment. This is not the voice of Dave Rabin, if you can't tell. This is actually Larry Stafford Jr. once again filling in the huge, big shoes of Dave Rabin. I'm so glad to be here with you all today. We've got a great show lined up for everybody once again. I'll try my best to fill in for Dave here as he takes some needed rest or whatever he has to do. I'm glad to be here to help him out this week. On today's show, we're going to be speaking with, in just a second actually, Councilmember Will Jawando, who is the at-large council member for Montgomery County. He's going to talk a bit about his trip to the DNC. I know a lot of people may have watched that fiasco last week. And have some thoughts on it. We'll be taking callers as well. And he'll also be speaking about some local issues with education in Montgomery County, as well as a new bill that he's proposing around police stops. So that's all going to be very interesting. And then we'll get into some headlines for the day, and we'll play some jams as well. Again, so glad to hear everybody. Hear from everybody today when we get the chance to speak. I'll be very appreciative for folks to call in at 202-588-0893. So please call in to get your questions in as well. 202-588-0893. And we've got council member at large from Montgomery County. I wish I had a soundboard for a drum roll or something like that, but just imagine it in your head. We've got council member Will Jawando. Welcome to Community Watch and Comment.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's great to be with you.
All right. So glad to have
you. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you pretty good. I think everything is sounding good here. So, of course, starting off on the show, I know we got some local stuff we want to cover, but, I'm not usually the one to talk about national politics as much. And I think you know me for working locally in Montgomery and at the state level. But I'd be remiss if we did not speak about the Democrats' convention last week, which you were an attendee of. And yeah, it was a huge ordeal. First question for you, Could you give me your top three moments, takeaways, whatever you have, just from going to the convention?
Yeah, well, it was, you know, one of the things that I've been really noticing is that people who watched online got a really good experience, or watched on TV got a great experience too. The energy was palpable, man. You know, from the first night of thanking President Joe Biden for stepping aside and ushering in a new generation of leadership, to certainly the Obamas, particularly Michelle Obama, who, you know, hit every point. It was so nice to see them be free and talk in real terms about the dangers of the Trump presidency, but also about the vision that Kamala Harris has, and what she's accomplished. And then, of course, hearing from the vice president herself, you know, it was just an amazing production. And oh, by the way, we had Little John during the roll call vote, you know, like among other things. So it was great energy, great unity. You heard from veterans, you heard from Republicans for Harris, you heard from obviously vice president nominee Tim Walz, coach, and in the emotional moment with his son Gus. It showed our big tent. You heard from everyone from AOC to Bernie to Elizabeth Warren on that side to the more moderate members of our party. It was just, I think it was a really good opportunity to show what we stand for, the rule of law, democracy, and for an America that includes everybody, and that isn't just out for personal gain, like in the case of Donald Trump. And that was really heartening and really a different place to be a delegate. You know, I was ready to do my duty as a Biden delegate, you know, but 6 weeks ago, we didn't know we were going to be here in the way we were. And I think it's just totally energized the party and the country. And you're seeing that, I think, play out in the polls as well. And on down ballot races, you know, to the point that you made, we have a big Senate race here in Maryland. We need to get Angela Alsobrooks elected. We've got congressional races that are important. And I think it's just really helped in all those areas.
Yeah, I mean, I can't lie. It definitely looked very exciting there. I didn't really watch like some people watch. I know some people watched every day. I tuned in primarily to hate, right? Like I wanted to hate the little John part and the whole roll call energy. I was like, okay, I can't lie. This is kind of fire. But you know, I have like the critiques as well, right? And I wanted to hear from you, especially as a progressive, somebody who's been standing up in the Montgomery County Council. Like I want to add is like, without saying like how bad Trump is, I know Trump is terrible, but like, what are the things that are positive motivations that you see actually out here?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I won't belabor it because you asked me not to, but I do think the existential global threat of a second term of Donald Trump is not something to be taken lightly. And oftentimes elections are choices. You know, you're not always 100%. I don't know if there's a choice in life I've been 100% happy with, certainly not as an elected leader, as a public servant. But the choice here has never been more stark. And I do think, you know, you have to play offense and defense. And the defense here is really important to make sure Donald Trump doesn't get back in. That is important. But to your point, I do think there also are a lot of positives, right? You know, many of us, you know, I didn't vote for President Biden in the primary last time. You know, I had a different pick. But he has, him and Vice President Harris, you know, not on every issue, and I'll talk about Gaza and the Israeli conflict in a moment. But he has come to the left on, you know, on issues that during his time as a senator and other things that people have been surprised, you know, whether it be student loans, right? You know, I worked a lot on that issue on Capitol Hill. I chair the Education Committee in Montgomery County now. The amount of the billions of dollars of student loan forgiveness, a rallying cry from the left and from so many young people, they led on that issue. And a lot of people were skeptical about how much debt relief would come from the administration. The Inflation Reduction Act, you know, the investment in environment, the billions of dollars that's coming to Baltimore and other communities in a equitable way to help, you know, change course on years of environmental degradation and just really racism, environmental racism. Those are just two big ones. And also, I think Vice President Harris, what I will say, she's the nominee. She has taken some stances that are a little different than the president. And to be in the room, I was talking about this with someone yesterday, when she spoke to the protesters that were at the convention who were able to make their voices heard. I would have liked to see a Palestinian voice, and there was negotiations that didn't end up happening. But the comments that the vice president made, she ended her sentences on that we need to have it, not only a ceasefire, not only a return of the hostages, of course, but a path for dignity and a of self-determination and statehood for the Palestinian people. And the room was exploding on that point. And this is, left all the types of Democrats that were there. And I just think there is an opportunity on even that, a really intractable, tough issue, to recognize the dignity and the suffering of the of Gazans and the Palestinian people, as well as saying we need to make sure that the Israeli people are safe and that the hostages are returned, and recognizing that the current Israeli policies are making both sides less safe, and Netanyahu. And I think she's expressed more of a willingness to do that than even the president. And I think that denotes some hope. And so when you get on a bus, you wanna be heading in the right direction. And I think the Harris-Walz ticket is, for a progressive, as one myself, is heading in the right direction with the opportunity to influence them even more. And I think that is what the positive message is to someone who's on the progressive side of the aisle. I think you heard it from Bernie Sanders, you heard it from Elizabeth Warren, you heard it from AOC and others, that they're on board because they see that positive movement.
Yeah, I mean, I want to be hopeful right with you, of course, though I struggle at times. I know Ilhan Omar had some comments that I appreciated about particularly she was commenting, I guess they say, on what AOC had said about the vice president working tirelessly for a ceasefire. And it's just a question of how hard are you working if they haven't done it? So there's a lot to be said.
I agree. Look, man, I went to Israel a month ago. There is no question in my mind that Israeli policy subjugates and denigrates the Palestinian people and makes Israelis less safe and is getting in the way of a ceasefire. But we got to keep pushing. But I just think that's our job to push. That's what those protesters were doing. That's what we'll have to continue to do. But I do feel positive knowing the vice president personally and hearing her language on these issues that we have a partner to push, to push upon, and that we'll listen.
Oh, wow. So you know personally too. We'll give her a call, tell her like stop giving them bombs. Like just stop, say, hey, we're not giving you anything else.
I agree. And that should be a big push. That should be a change in policy, right? They've danced around it. We have a lot of influence in this conflict. Absolutely.
Well, no, I appreciate that. And again, I want to say to our listeners as well, we're taking call-ins. So that number, and once again, you're listening to Larry Stafford Jr. and council member Will Jawando on Community Watch and Comment. And our number to call in is 202-588-0893, and you can have your voice heard as well. We've got Councilmember Jawando, I think, for at least, up to 11:30, right? You got a good amount of
time. That sounds good.
So, yeah, make sure you get those call-ins, 202-588-0893, and we'll go to you on the phones. So the next thing, I want to bring it back locally in the territory I like to talk about. You're, I guess, in the process of introducing, or you have introduced the Freedom to Leave Act. I'm very curious about this bill. So it seems centered around trying to prevent you know, the wide level of police interactions that a lot of people have to go through that sometimes can turn adverse. But yeah, tell us, give the listeners a basic overview of this Freedom to Leave Act, what it is, what it does. And I'd also love to hear what inspired it as well. I don't know if that's too many questions at once, but I'm very curious
well, about the Freedom to Leave Act. I'll try to wrap them in and you can certainly cut me off or jump in. But I'll try to be concise. You know, the Freedom to Leave Act was named to remind people of their constitutional right under the Fourth Amendment against unreasonable search and seizure. And if you are asked, for example, can I search your car? Can I search your person by law enforcement? That means they don't have probable cause or the right to search you, and you can say no. That is current law under the Constitution, under the laws of the state of Maryland. And certainly Montgomery County. And many people don't know that. You might have heard of these Know Your Rights trainings that the NAACP and others have done over the years. So Freedom to Leave, you are free to leave if an officer asks you if they want to search you. Now, we know from social science research and criminal justice research that the power imbalance is so great that when you are asked by someone with a gun to be searched in order to not feel like you're guilty or for all the other, reasons, that most of the time people agree to the search. So you are giving up your right because you feel pressured. We also know from the research here in Montgomery County and nationally that these searches are really not fruitful, that they less than 1% of the time yield any contraband or weapon or drugs. And that they are also disproportionately done on people of color. In Montgomery County, 80% of the people asked to consent to a search. Again, reminding you that means there is no legal basis to conduct a search. 80% of those asked are Black and Latino. 50% are Black, 30% are Latino. Less than 1% of the time do they yield anything. So you have many, many people that go home feeling less safe, feeling bad about their community. And that is not good. For many reasons, it's a waste of time for law enforcement. Actually, in jurisdictions that have removed consent searches, which is what my bill would do, it would just say the officers cannot ask to search somebody unless they have probable cause that a crime has been committed, in which case they can search them already. In jurisdictions that have eliminated or reduced consent searches, you've seen less disparity in traffic stops, and you've seen higher recovery rates of contraband. So exactly what you would want to see when you focus searches on people who actually need to be searched and don't just do it indiscriminately. And to answer your last question, I've been the subject of this. I'm sure you have too, Larry. You know, I worked for the Montgomery County Police Department when I was 19 years old as an AmeriCorps member. I lost my best friends to gun violence and was interested in law enforcement, ended up becoming a civil rights lawyer and a public servant later. But I was pulled over 10 times that year. I had cornrows. I was much younger. I was driving a Camry and was always asked to search my car. Sometimes I said yes. I was never charged with anything, but I felt really bad about my community. And when we had the public hearing on this bill earlier this year, you heard directly from people in the community from whom this has happened to. And I just think that's an important part that people need to understand. Law enforcement is experienced differently depending on who you are and what you look like. And so this is a way to help address that.
Got it. Now we got two callers. I think we have two callers at least. Let's bring up the first one. So say your name, where you're calling from. You're on with Larry Stafford and Will Jawando.
Yes, hi. My name is Gary Tidbury. I had a question for you. Thanks for your guest. Since, 1948, the Palestinian people have been robbed of their land, murdered, jailed arbitrarily, starved. So this didn't start October 7th of 2023. Yet, this is the first time they've have really had a big to-do over it, because finally some a group rebelled. And despite all the murders, what is really called mowing the grass so that the majority of people stay Jewish in that land, They didn't have these big newspaper and this big to-do and the thing about these people have to protect themselves. But now they want to take my tax money, and now they want to take my relatives and put them in the military and die for a country that the world court says is committing genocide, probably committing genocide, and they're very, very likely doing things to prisoners. And why would they vote for Kamala Harris when she can stop that stuff? She can say, when I become president, I will cut off arms to this crazy racist regime. Every other non-white group in the world, except here in this country, which gets news saying this country will allow these white people to defend themselves, the white people who are the aggressors and have been the aggressors. So why is it that black people are so excited about Kamala Harris when she has not, in her past as a attorney general or as a prosecutor or anything, has shown any concern about us? That's my question.
Appreciate the call and the question. And as I said earlier, I do think Vice President Harris, Kamala Harris, has gone further than President Biden in her language around this issue and her willingness to use the tools that you described, which I do think are appropriate, to withhold funding, to withhold bombs. If the Israeli government and Netanyahu, which I agree, he needs to be out of power 100%. If they're not willing to negotiate in good faith and to put on a path towards Palestinian autonomy and self-determination, I do understand, I agree with former President Jimmy Carter that, we want peace, not apartheid, and there is an apartheid state. I've been to Israel, I've been to Palestine, I've seen it with my own eyes. The freedom of movement, the access, the checkpoints, even in the West Bank outside of Gaza, it is the conditions are deplorable. I visited areas of the West Bank where Palestinian schools have been destroyed by the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force. So I've seen it, and I understand the larger context. And agree that U.S. policy needs to change to help influence a better outcome for the Palestinian people, which will ultimately keep the Israeli people safe as well. And I do think that we're going to need to, just like we would with any president, when Kamala Harris becomes president, to talk to her, to pressure her, to keep the movement going, so that there can be better outcomes. But I am hopeful that that she is more open to using those tools. I've been very proud of Senator Chris Van Hollen, who has put forward some of the bills that and urged the president to use that authority to stop the humanitarian crisis in Gaza and to use that leverage, which we have great leverage. So I understand the skepticism based on the many decades and years of this conflict, which has been very difficult for that region and particularly for Palestinian people. But I am hopeful that we can have a change in policy that brings peace and puts us on a path towards peace and self-determination.
Can I ask why you're hopeful when she says we're going to continue to give arms to Israel? She says that. Outright.
I think we got to get to the next caller too, but yeah, you can answer that as well, council member. But I also want to make sure before you have to go, we hear from the next caller also.
Yeah, I'll just say briefly, I think I have heard more of a willingness. Again, you can't do all your negotiations in public. I've met with former Secretary Liu, the ambassador there, and I've met with others. There is a lot of pressure going on behind the scenes. I know that, and I understand the angst and concern and some people who want to cut off all aid. I don't think that is, all forms of support to Israel. I don't think that's appropriate. But the types of weapons, what's sent, how it's sent, condition-based weapons or support are things that I think the vice president will be open to. But again, we have to push. And I'm hopeful based on the conversation and the language and what I've seen her talk about. That doesn't mean there isn't work to do.
Okay, so let's see if we still got that next caller up here. All right, well, go ahead. You're on with Councilmember Will Jawando on Community Watch and Comment.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep.
All right, great. Well, first of all, I want to congratulate everybody and thank you for WPFW. Will Jawando, I hope I pronounced it correctly. I'm not a Malaya. I'm known as an artist and an activist, and I was a dance teacher for your kids when you were first going out for the council.
So, oh, yeah, at Princess Moon?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
yeah,
so great. Well, nice to see. Nice to hear from you.
Yeah, I want to congratulate you and thank you for all the work you're doing. I want to say generally that I'm very excited about the movement. I'm glad the party, because I do vote as an independent, but I'm glad the Democratic Party has made the move that it made. I think it was very, very viable, and I think we have to not only work in that direction, I want to work for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz to win by a landslide. So there's no conversation about, you know. However, the next point is for everybody to stay involved in the process. Because too often, including with Obama, who I was happy to vote for, we as a collective didn't stay on top of things. I know myself, I didn't want the world to think we were criticizing him too much, because, of course, there were a whole lot of unnecessary criticisms. But we do have to stay with our elected officials. And then we have to stay in the game to make sure that we're voting for the other positions that need to be voted for. We need to be aware, because they're not even teaching government in schools anymore. There's adults and children don't know how the laws are made. So it doesn't just depend on the president. It depends on other positions, on how they get made, and that needs to be taught again in the schools, you know. So that would help. So we need a whole lot of community education, because people don't know how things are affected. I'm glad you're telling me about this particular law where if you're asked to search, you can actually say no, because I know I've heard of situations where policemen have said, well, I smell marijuana in the car, so we need to search, and therefore they, quote unquote, have a right to search. So there's a lot of abuse we know of power. So as much as we can to work minimize that will be very, very great. I would love for there to be an officer-friendly reputation once again in the community, because there was a time when people actually could rely on the police. Now, most people of color I know, if they have any kind of altercation, they're like, well, we ain't calling the police. So they're trying to find another way to work towards it, whether it's a issue with a neighbor, you know, something even more severe, unless it's really an accident or a murder or something of that sort. So we definitely have to get our police to be more public servants for the people, and change that dynamics along with a few others. So, but anyway, thank you
appreciate
for all
that.
The work you all are doing. I'm here to support you, encourage you, and get this thing moving forward. I think our young people are also being inspired to do something different, and I think we have to make all these wars be less of a focus, because we have so much that money can be used for here in the United States amongst our own.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for calling in, and thank you for, you know, pouring into young people, including my children, through dance. I'll just say briefly in response, I couldn't agree with you more on staying engaged. You know, I worked for President Obama when he was Senator Obama. I worked in the White House and Department of Education, and I saw up front that the challenge of being what I call, you know, the Jackie Robinson, right? You know, like the first, and not wanting to criticize, and also the challenges he had in governing. I think, you know, Vice President Harris will benefit from the fact that she wouldn't be the first. She'll be the first woman, and which brings its own challenges for sure, but she won't be the first Black person of color. And I think we do have to stay engaged, not only to support her and Tim Walz's agenda, but also to push on things that we think should be happening in our communities, overseas, all the things we've been talking about. And that engagement in turn makes us stronger in our local communities. You know, I tell people all the time, I'm one of 11 people who decides a $7 billion budget. I chair the education committee of the 14th largest school district in the country. And your roads, your police, your fire, your local taxes, it's all impacted by our position. So you better know who we are and what we stand for, because we have a big impact on your life. So I really appreciate all those points that you've made and your continued engagement.
Okay. All right. Bless you all.
Bless you.
Okay.
Great. And given that she mentioned education as well, I wonder if we could shift gears, because I know you're now leading the education committee in Montgomery County. So is there anything like that you have on your mind as an update as we're now experiencing back to school? I just dropped off my daughter for the first time at school just the other day. So yeah, what's going on in the education committee?
Well, congratulations. Kindergarten?
Yep, she started kindergarten yesterday.
There you go. Yeah, so our youngest of four started kindergarten. He and our oldest is in eighth grade, but it's an exciting week here in Montgomery County and across the region as many, many kids went back to school. Yeah, look, as we know, education is the great equalizer. It is key. You know, there's a reason during the period of slavery in this country and other places across the world that education was denied. It was against the law to teach Black folks how to read because education comes power. And we still are fighting in this country for equitable access to education because of housing segregation, both de facto and de jure now that exists. We have different levels of quality and resources across our country. We do better than most here in Montgomery County. We have a really strong education system where teachers care and they're working hard. I've been visiting schools all week and just encouraging folks as they get started. And every child can learn, but we have to realize that the teachers and educators need the support for our very diverse needs. You know, I remind people, we have 160,000 plus students in Montgomery County. Nearly half of them are in poverty. That's a dramatic increase from when I was in MCPS, you know, 35 years ago. And we also have a very large increasing number of special education students that have been identified that need supports. And that takes resources, and we need more teachers going into that profession. You know, we also have an increasing number of physical building needs, right, to make sure that everyone has access to the air conditioning and the units and all the upgrades in the schools that they need. And so all these things have happened pretty quickly as far as our diversification. Our kids are, you know, our school system is majority kids of color. And, you know, we're going to have to continue to decide, are we going to pay teachers a fair wage and continue to move their salaries up like they should for all the work that they do? Are we going to make sure they have the access to the resources as, you know, things like lunches and counselors and social workers, all the things that are going to help their kids learn? And we're going to have to fund that. And I think, you know, we had a big battle last year in the county government and across the state, really, of how to fund education. And that's something we're going to have to deal with at the state level with the requirements for the Maryland's Blueprint for the Future, which requires us to expand pre-K and teacher pay and a whole bunch of really good things, but we have to pay for it. And I just think there are big economic benefits. I don't think it's been documented to investing in education, but we're at a moment in time where the cost of educating our children has gone up, and we are struggling to meet that cost. And so it's going to necessitate us as a community having real discussions about, are we going to continue to double down and make those investments so that our kids can learn and create the jobs of the future and create safer, more holistic communities? And that's a real battle for us right now. And I'll be, you know, we're focused on that. But I think the answer is we must do it. And we just have to figure out how to support it at the federal, state, and local level.
Right. Now, speaking of the funding side of it, wanted to just get your take on, I don't know if you were at Mako a few weeks ago, right, where the governor got mm-hmm. some coverage, just talking about pretty much making adjustments to the blueprint. So the blueprint being the large scale reform bill that Democrats passed in Annapolis, setting you know, the way for education to be funded across the state, which you referred to, he says, he was quoted, "But if there's one thing that legislative history has taught us, it's this: laws of enormous potential must always be refined after they are passed." You have any idea what he's talking about, and any takes on the government's, the governor's commentary there?
Well, you know, I think the general point is, I agree, right? Look, you know, having worked on Capitol Hill on big laws like No Child Left Behind, which certainly had some good parts, but had a lot of flaws, you do have to come back and you know, tweak things. But I would say that the core investments in raising teacher pay and expanding early childhood education, access to workforce training and career and tech ed and other things that are in the blueprint, you know, pre-kindergarten, as I said, to all four-year-olds, and those core things should not be going away. You know, if you want to adjust how we get there slightly, or look at timelines, or funding mechanisms, you know, tweaks, I think, you know, that's something that could be discussed. But I think that what I would say is, for the requirements, or how local jurisdictions need to meet those requirements, because that's been one of the big issues, is if you're asking us to do this, you know, we need the support from the state, you know, to do some of these things. And so, you know, I think the governor said everything's on the table, including revenue adjustments, which could include increasing taxes, particularly in a progressive way, which I'd be for. There's a bill in Annapolis last year that would have allowed us to have a progressive income tax locally. Now everyone makes 3.2%, pays 3.2%. So if you're a billionaire or you're a teacher, you pay 3.2%, and that's a regressive tax. It's unlike federal estate taxes, which are bracketed based on income. If we were to raise the top bracket from 3.2 to 3.7 just on millionaires in Montgomery County, we would have tens of millions of dollars more a year to spend on things like early childhood education in Montgomery County. And so I do think we need to look at things like that. But, you know, the core commitments of the blueprint, I wouldn't be in favor of rolling back. But how we get there, how we create flexibility, the timelines, you know, I think those are things that, yeah, over time you do have to look at. But the core commitments and are things that should stay in place. And I think the governor believes that as well.
Great. Well, that's really good to hear. So we'll all need to be paying attention in this upcoming legislative session to see, you know, what they're talking about as far as education, funding, and of course on the council. Maybe last thing before you go, because you were speaking about your bill that you have around police stops. Yeah. What are the next steps with that bill? How can people support if they want to support?
Appreciate that. Yeah, we have a committee hearing. We had a public hearing earlier this year. The next step is a public safety work session, which will be on September 15th. Just here in a few weeks. And not September 15th, because that's a holiday. That's a week, Sunday, September 16th. That at 9:30 a.m., there'll be a public safety committee hearing on that bill. My hope is, if folks have an opinion, they can write in to council member, just type in our county council, Montgomery County Council, and there's a way to send emails in support or suggestions. They can also tune in to that committee session or show up in person at the council building, 100 Maryland Avenue, Rockville, Maryland, or tune in online or on YouTube. People need to hear that this is important. We need our law enforcement. We need good public safety and community safety, but we also need them to be very effective and to not do things that disproportionately impact communities of color and aren't really keeping people safe. And I think this change could go a long way in sending that message that we are working on these longstanding issues in a very proactive way, in a way that balances the need for public safety with the need for everyone feeling safe in their persons as well. So those are the next steps, and hopefully it'll pass out of committee, and then it would go to full council later in the month of September, most likely.
Okay, got it. All right. And we got to tell the police to leave you alone if you're driving that Camry. Leave us alone. I used to push a Corolla myself. Well, thank you so much, Councilmember Jawando, for joining us today. I appreciate your time here and for taking the question.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for all that you do for the state and the region, Larry. Really appreciate it.
All right. You're listening to Community Watch and Comment with Larry Stafford as your host. And we'll take a quick little break and come right back with some news headlines. Welcome back to Community Watch and Comment with Larry Stafford Jr. on as the host and not Dave Rabin today. I've taken the microphone. I've taken it away while Dave just rests in a room somewhere, hopefully. So that was Strong Boy and Haziz Malia remix. I don't know how to pronounce that word. I'm sorry, y'all. But, want to play some nice indie music here. May not be the typical pace, I don't know, on WPFW, but I've discovered this genre called shoegaze, and I love it. So check that out if you're into any music that sounds like that. Some different vibes right here. All right, so before we get out for the day, just want to cover some of the top headlines I thought would be pretty relevant for folks. So one, if you're going outside today, I did see an alert this morning that in certain parts of our region, depending on where you are, I suppose, the Metropolitan Washington Council on Governments has issued a Code Orange air quality alert for Tuesday, August 27th. This indicates that pollution levels may be a little unhealthy for sensitive groups, particularly. So this is in effect for DC, Northern Virginia, and parts of Maryland as well. So, I don't know the specific nature of the cause of this air quality alert, but it's sad to say that we're going to be having more issues like this as we experience climate change. And I think many folks can remember, I think it was just last summer, where we had the fires in Canada that were blazing to such a degree that, we had, in parts of our, the northeastern area, the Mid-Atlantic region, you're seeing the sky in red, the air quality was terrible during those times. And, it's unfortunate that we have to live with this now. So for those who have conditions like asthma or any other condition that puts you in that sensitive group category, just wanted to make sure that folks were aware of that, of this air quality alert. Now, taking it down to Prince George's County, gorgeous Prince George's, where I reside. So a lot of folks have not realized that tomorrow there is going to be a community, a Prince George's County Police Accountability Board meeting. So that's going to be tomorrow, August 28th at 6 p.m. So for those who don't know, the Prince George's County Police Accountability Board is a civilian-led body established to oversee the local police force, ensuring there's transparency and accountability in law enforcement activities. So they review complaints against officers. They hold public meetings such as this one where they discuss issues and make recommendations for improving policing. So I mentioned this after we have spoken with Councilmember Jawanda, because this is one of the mechanisms for oversight on police, and it's, these bodies are established, I believe, in all counties in Maryland. We fought in Annapolis to make sure that they have additional powers and oversight capabilities, investigatory abilities. We did not receive all of the things that we fought for in legislation, but we do have these vehicles, and you know, it is a place for us to raise concerns, at least with police, to organize folks to pressure for changes in terms of policing. So that is August 28th, 2024 at 6 p.m. And if you would like the Zoom link for that, please email me at larry@progressivemaryland.org. You can always just drop me a note there. I will get you the Zoom link, larry@progressivemaryland.org, if you are interested in attending that meeting by Zoom. Next, again, keeping it for our listeners in Prince George's, but this certainly was some relevant news for listeners across the region, because this headline was certainly shocking, though I will say for myself, not surprising. I think many listeners might have been aware of the Prince George's County Councilmember Mel Franklin being indicted on charges related to misuse of campaign funds. Now, if anybody had listened to my previous show on WPFW that I hosted on Fridays, the Progress Report, we actually covered Mel, I believe, several times. I mean, he had been pretty notorious figures for progressives on the Prince George's County Council, fighting against project labor standards for workers in construction. He'd been one of the chief opponents of that. And he's had a history on the council, both history in drunk driving and county vehicles, crashing those vehicles, and then getting in trouble for that several times. And more recently, you know, he was indicted on these charges, taking campaign funds, using it for personal loans, using the money for his campaign committee to most notably pay for plastic surgery for himself and a friend. Some people have taken to calling him BBL Mel. I'm not going to do that, but I am going to mention that they've been calling him that. But I'll say this while I make some light of it, because it is a shame to see somebody in public service who's supposed to be doing public service, you know, again, breaking the law, the laws that they're responsible for in some ways, and passing and amending, you know, flouting those laws. But I will say I'm sad to see that yesterday, he did plead guilty to these charges of misusing these campaign funds. And so he is slated to be serving potentially, I think it's 5 years, or some of it suspended or something of that nature, one year suspended specifically, and he has to pay $133,000 in restitution. So that's the update on the case of Mel Franklin. It's sad to see, again, you know, a younger, you know, another Black man going into the criminal legal system, you know, for messing up in public office. And we, of course, had the issues with Trayvon White recently in D.C. as well, where he is now facing additional scrutiny and prosecution. So very sad to see. So I think I'm pretty low on time here, but those are three of the headlines that have stood out. I thought listeners should know. And that's it pretty much for today's show. I want to send a huge thank you to our amazing engineer, Mike, for his expertise and guidance. You know, as I come here as a total amateur hosting on the radio, but that's the spirit of WPFW right here, bringing the community to the airwaves and giving the community a voice. So thank you once again for WPFW having me here. And Dave Rabin, I'm sure he'll be back. So we're going to get into some news next. And that will be followed by Don't Forget the Blues with Lady Murr. Thanks for listening once again. I'm Larry Stafford Jr., your fill-in host for today. Stay safe and have a good week with some good vibes.
Now masters of war, you feel all the big guns, you feel the big machine, and you feel the big bomb. You hide behind walls, and you hide behind desks. I just want you to know you never done nothing but fear to destroy. Play with my world, like you're a little toy. You put a gun in my hand, and you hide. Then you try to run for the hour when you're back for less life. How much do I know to talk out of turn? You may say that I'm young. They say that I'm unlearned, but that one thing I know, though I'm younger than you, then my Jesus will never forgive what you do. You're faster than the trigger. Brothers to fight, then you sit back and watch while death counts get high. You said in your mansion, while young people's blood flow out of their body. Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Will it buy your forgiveness? Oh, no, no. Do you think that it does? I think you're gonna find
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Christina Onnested. The Israeli military says it's rescued one of the hostages abducted in Hamas's October 7th attack, which ignited the ongoing war in Gaza. The military said today a 52-year-old was rescued in a complex operation in the southern Gaza Strip. Some 120 hostages remain in Hamas captivity. Israel's retaliatory war in Gaza has killed more than 40,400 Palestinians, according to local health officials. They say it's also displaced 90% of Gaza's 2.3 million from their homes and causing heavy destruction across the besieged territory. Meanwhile, the United Nations says it's suspending aid operations in Gaza after Israeli forces ordered evacuations from Deir al-Bala, where the UN is located, marking yet another move for the agency under deteriorating conditions. Emily Burris has more.
Evacuation orders were recently issued by Israel for the area where the UN Central Command for All Aid Operations is located in the territory. The United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees, or UNRWA, is still providing health care and other assistance. Louise Wateridge is a senior communications officer for UNRWA living in Gaza. She says the conditions in Gaza are dire.
Lack of access to clean drinking water, the trash that is piling up everywhere among the population, among the conditions where they are living, sewage water, which is absolutely filthy. Again, people living among this. And desperation. When you speak to people here, when we speak to our colleagues, there is very limited hope.
Israel's military issued 16 such evacuation orders this month. And as a result, the humanitarian zone declared by Israel has shrunk to about 11% of the Gaza Strip. With a lack of access to aid and services, polio has reemerged in Gaza for the first time in 25 years. The first case was reported in an unvaccinated 10-month-old baby who has since been diagnosed with paralysis. A UN campaign to vaccinate 95% of children in Gaza under the age of 10 is scheduled to start Saturday. I'm Emily Burris, Pacifica Radio.
The chief of Ukraine's army says they've gained more control of Russia's Kursk region, nearly 500 square miles, capturing nearly 600 Russian soldier prisoners in its operation that began earlier this month. Nighttime Russian drone and missile attacks struck across Ukraine, killing at least 5 people and injuring 16 a day after a heavy barrage pounded energy facilities and water infrastructure throughout the country. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky said the attacks included 81 drones, as well as cruise and ballistic missiles, some of which landed near Zaporizhia, killing a child. It's also the location of Europe's largest nuclear power plant. UN Atomic Agency watchdog is warning of the risk of nuclear disaster. Here's Rafael Grossi.
There has been activity near here. I was informed about impact of drones. I was shown some of the remnants of those and signs of the impact they had. And apart from that, the fact that we have, as I said, military activity a few miles from here, a few kilometers from here, make it an immediate point of attention.
Rafael Grossi, Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency. A federal judge in Texas has temporarily blocked the Biden administration's new program that provides undocumented spouses of U.S. citizens a path to citizenship. The order Monday by District Judge Campbell Barker comes after 16 Republican-led states challenged the program in a lawsuit filed last week after the program officially launched and began accepting applications. It's estimated to benefit some 500,000 immigrants and mixed-status families across the country, plus about 50,000 of their children. The Republican-led states accused the Biden administration of bypassing Congress for what they said was blatant political purposes. I'm Christina Onnested reporting for Pacifica. I'm Christina Onnested reporting for Pacifica Radio.